Welcome to the first episode of our new podcast series, When Economies Falter. We'll be taking a look at how different asset classes typically behave in severe instances of macro instability and currency debasement. I'm Harry Moorman, a fund manager at Coronation and your host for the series.
And I'm Seamus Vasey, a portfolio manager and analyst in Coronation's fixed income team.
In this podcast, we'll be delving into the asset class behavior in a number of states with fragile economies. Our list of countries to explore over the three episodes in this series are Argentina, Turkey, Brazil, Egypt, Sri Lanka, Zambia, Ghana, Venezuela, and Lebanon. Now, from a macro stability perspective, South Africa is still quite a few steps removed from the countries that we'll be discussing in this series. Seamus, why are we looking at these worst-case scenarios?
Well, Harry, you're completely correct in highlighting just how severe these case studies of macroeconomic stress are. They really are very much at the further end of the spectrum when it comes to episodes of country decline. However, this is very much the deliberate aspect of the research project. The point was to consider the periods of colossal policy failure and to extract any insights that would prove helpful for investors if they were to ever find themselves in a similar situation in the future. And that's also key here. The analysis wasn't examining a contemporary dynamic in South Africa or even premised on the notion that a similar level of sovereign malfunctioning is necessarily a particularly probable outcome for South Africa. But this is all very much in keeping with Coronation's research philosophy, where we spend a lot of effort in considering downside risks and indeed always examine scenarios considering the maximum downside outcomes. It's also about conducting in-depth analysis well before one may actually ever need it. So over time, we accumulate a body of insights that can be easily updated, built upon, and expanded as circumstances warrant. And hopefully, in many instances whereby the very worst scenarios are considered, not even get used at all. And so, at a very broad level, one such scenario is an extended period of severe countrywide decline to the point of major macroeconomic instability and typically accompanied by one or more financial crises. I know this has a dystopian ring about it, but actually that's not a bad way to think about what we've done here.
You're going to have to elaborate on this dystopian angle. That sounds concerning.
Okay. So the thing about dystopian art is that it tends to surge in popularity in moments of existential threat. The major such examples that typically come to mind are at the end of the Second World War, where concerns around the use and the proliferation of the atomic bomb, and more recently in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. And, you know, fascination with such morbid narratives isn't really all that surprising. Post-apocalyptic stories are just reflections of the times, real-life plots that are extended to their most desolate endings. Indeed, this is probably the common thread across dystopian fiction, taking the fears and problems of a society and exaggeratedly reflecting them back. And I think this is really the spirit in which the analysis should be considered, not as a prediction, but as a scenario, as a wargaming exercise, as the kind of planning one knows you should do, but also hope to never actually utilize.
But what is the use of looking at all of these case studies? Were you searching for a template that would best describe South Africa's low road scenario if this were to materialize?
Actually, the opposite. We looked at an assorted cross-section of episodes or templates that differed substantially in their root causes, manifestations, and ultimately also their resolutions. We hope that by considering a wide range of such events across countries, a more compelling construct of how such a regime might unfold within the South African context could be formed.
But surely the specific nature of any crisis determines the consequences and, more precisely, the distortions that these asset prices undergo.
I think that actually that's probably correct. But there is an extremely significant exception to this, and that's relative asset class performance. In extended periods of macroeconomic instability or acute sovereign distress, the typical ordinal ranking of asset class performances can become upended. And by this, I don't mean the typical cyclical transfer of leadership and performance among asset classes, but a more pronounced distortion of the broader regime, overarching pricing, and hence subsequent performance of entire asset classes over more sustained periods. And so considering the common features of all these heterogeneous instances of prolonged sovereign instability may actually prove the most useful output of the analysis when thinking about investment portfolios facing the prospect of an extended countrywide decline. This was the primary purpose in conducting these detailed case studies.
So let's turn to these case studies now. Our first journey is to Argentina. Seamus, what happened in Argentina?
Any study of economic crisis deserves to include Argentina. It's basically the poster child for boom-bust cycles and episodes of macroeconomic instability. Unfortunately, there's an absolutely extensive history here. The most recent installment can arguably be dated from late 2016, which marked the full restoration of Argentina as a non-defaulting sovereign. In addition, there was a major change in politics, so a non-Peronist, pro-market government came into power, very good, broad popular support, and reform-mindist. And to top it all, a recently devalued exchange rate had really set the foundation for a period of sustained recovery of the country and structural reform. And, you know, it was a real moment of genuine hope for renewal for Argentina. And for 2 years thereafter, there was relative stability and progress in tackling Argentina's many underlying structural impediments to higher sustainable growth and lower inflation. But this kind of faltered with poor economic growth, still sticky inflation, and most importantly, probably, an unsustainable debt load. Economic conditions continued to deteriorate, and that's exactly when COVID-19 hit. So the existing decline was meaningfully intensified. This, coupled with the inability and also turned out the unwillingness of government to consolidate spending, eventually led to fiscal monetization, which itself led to precipitous currency devaluation, both domestic and external terms.
So that does give us more insight into what happened in Argentina. But let's get back to the key question. What happened to the asset class returns?
Very simply, from the onset of COVID, the external valuation of all Argentinian assets declined in real terms. Local bonds ended up being the very worst performers of the period, as not only did extremely high inflation erode the domestic value of these nominal assets, but the external value of the currency also cratered. In addition, Argentina unfortunately fell back into very familiar ways and actually defaulted on their government debt again in 2020. After that, cash was the second poorest performer. While relatively high short-term interest rates in the country initially helped prop up the domestic performance of cash for some time, the inflation-adjusted and dollar-based returns both became progressively more negative over time. It was really only over the course of 2019 and into 2022, and then over the course of 2023, a meaningful recovery was posted, both in domestic currency terms, but also measured in U.S. dollars. And when taking a long-term perspective here, so up until about the mid part of 2023 and over the previous decade, what we actually saw is that Argentinian equities on a per annum basis actually returned about 6.5% per annum. Now, which doesn't sound like an awful lot, and relative to DM equity markets, also in dollar terms over the same period, but relative to the EM peer group, which performed something around 3.5% or just below that over the same period in dollar terms, it was a good performance. Now, the update to this really comes towards the end of 2023, where there was an unexpected outcome to the general election and a very pro-reformist, very pro-market new government was put into place, and they instantly embarked on another severe over 50% devaluation of the currency. And what happened then? Well, it was really just an extension of what we've just described in the sense that nominal asset classes in Argentina continued to perform very poorly. But then equity markets did extraordinarily well. And so that demonstrated not just value preservation characteristics, but also in some sense, looking ahead at an idea of embodying some sort of optimism about the recovery itself. So the equity market was functioning exactly as you would hope it would do. This is still an ongoing story, unfortunately, for Argentina. It's still a live, essentially, episode or occurrence, and we haven't seen the end of it. The idea that equities have been the only asset class which has preserved both wealth and purchasing power rings very true for Argentina.
So, Seamus, is this what happened in other instances with excessive currency debasement?
It certainly has been the case, and two particularly extreme examples of that lie with Venezuela and Lebanon.
What happened there?
Okay, so these are two particularly extreme examples that we looked at. Indeed, here, you know, everything kind of went wrong. Whatever could go wrong did go wrong. These were poly crises. They tended to accumulate over an extended period of time. And the lessons that we drew from the Argentinian example in the sense of the relative ranking of asset class performance very much shine through in the more extreme cases. And that's good to see. In other words, a sense of understanding what's important in terms of value preservation and what falls by the wayside. And it really comes down to the real economy linkages and the nominal linkages. So with currency debasement, the populace knows that ultimately there's just going to be, for all intents and purposes, a loss of value of your currency and anything denominated in nominal terms in that currency. And so equity classes become the place where one can preserve value. And we see this, and you might almost think, well, here's instances where the crises were so bad in both the real economy and the financial sense that you would actually not see value being preserved in equity markets. And that's not the case at all. In fact, we see evidence that there's even greater support for equity markets because, particularly in the instance where capital controls are utilized or put in place in these countries, there's a rush to these equity markets to preserve value. That's typically what happens in these instances.
Seamus, thank you very much. That really was very insightful. So in conclusion, it looks like equities do seem to be the asset class of choice during these trying conditions. We all agree that South Africa is not quite in the same position as many of these states. And we look forward to hosting you in our next episode, where we'll be focusing on Egypt, Sri Lanka, Zambia, Ghana, and Turkey.